Things are across cultures.
Primo Levi's The Wrench.
I hugged the wrench to me for years, and then in my very first public lecture, I decided to share it.
George Orwell's Homage to Catalonia.
How extraordinary it would have been if one day the door of my cell had opened and the guard had flung in a copy of Orwell's book.
For BBC Radio 3, five prominent personalities reflect on the books that changed their lives.
It is still capable of changing people, as it changed me.
Weeknights at 11 o'clock and on BBC iPlayer at bbc.co.uk/radio3.
The Witch from Tchaikovsky's Album for the Young, played there by Victoria Posnikova. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's a little after 11:30. And now jazz lineup with Julian Joseph.
Hello. Today, Jazz Lineup broadcasts a concert set from Birmingham bassist Ben Markland, recorded at the city's esteemed Symphony Hall. We also speak with punk jazzers Led Bibb about their new album and upcoming tour. But first, to some discs and pianist, composer and national treasure, Michael Garrick has a new CD with his jazz orchestra. It's called Tone Poems. He revisits music from his repertoire, giving it a shake-up and a new spin. This is an expanded version of Limbo Child, taken originally from his 1972 recording, Homestretch Blues.
Thank you.
Michael Garrick's Jazz Orchestra and Limbo Child from his latest album, Tone Poem, out now on the Jazz Academy label. You heard solos from drummer Alan Jackson and tenor man Sam Walker. One man who seems able to release new albums from the great beyond is definitely Miles Davis. For all you fans of the great master trumpeter comes the release of Bitches Brew Live. There are three previously unreleased tracks from the Newport Jazz Festival and the full concert set from the Isle of Wight a year later in 1970. This is It's About That Time. The remarkable Miles Davis on trumpet in 1969, and it's about that time and the theme. That's from Bitches Brew Live. Chick Corea was on Fine Form playing electric piano, Dave Holland on bass, and Jack DeJohnette was on drums. The album is such a fulfilling listen with Chick, Keith Jarrett, Dave Holland, and Jack DeJohnette all at the peak of their powers. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph. In 2003, five students at Middlesex University met through drummer Mark Holub, and the band Leadbib were created. They've made CDs, been nominated for a Mercury Music Prize, and are here at the BBC Broadcasting House for Jazz Lineup. Welcome, Leadbib. Mark Holub and Chris Williams.
Hello.
Hello.
So, the new album, Bring Your Own. Wild, it's wild. I'm going to just say it. It's in your remit.
Yeah, I think it's funny. I mean, as always, I think going into the studio and doing a new record, like as a jazz musician or as an improviser, mm-hmm. is a weird process because you don't really know what's going to come out. And I think, you know, for us, following up the last record, which, you know, did have this like big success and whatnot, it's like, oh, wow, like, are we going to produce something that's like worth doing in a way? And so everyone's like a bit nervous about it. And then when we came out, I think everyone was like, wow, I really like what we've produced. And I think we've managed to like encapsulate all the different things that we've been going for over these many years of being together into like one record. Which, yeah, it is a wild record. It's, you know, an energetic record.
Mark, you just touched upon something there. Jazz or improvised music? Which one is it?
Well, for me, jazz, I think. It's a complicated issue because a lot of jazz musicians would want it to not be jazz. And I don't want to upset anybody. If they wanted to call it something else, that's fine. I think the problem is that a lot of people see jazz as something sort of codified and set in, you know, generally like 50s and 60s sort of hard boppy sort of territory. And I don't see it that way. And I think that jazz has always been taking on, you know, different influences, you know, from the very beginning. And why can't jazz be a living art form? Why does it have to be stuck in the past? But if people want it to be stuck in the past, they want it to be like, you know, just emulating that sound, that's fine, and we can be something else. Whatever people want to call us is fine.
I mean, if it's an art form, it needs to be alive, surely.
Yeah, I certainly think so. Yeah.
Chris, how do you feel about that?
I was quite young, just coming into the band. I was just starting my final year at Middlesex, and at the time I was very much, I think, you know, into a kind of more perhaps changes playing and finds out to players like Kenny Garrett or people like that, and really kind of emulate and wanted to emulate those people and try and sound more, well, really playing inside changes, perhaps more inside kind of structures, and really playing in a bit, just, and then after leaving the union playing with other bands, just realising that, you know, there's just a whole load of music out there, and perhaps I don't have to adhere to certain, so many perhaps like rules or kind of, right, okay, playing in a certain way to call myself a jazz musician. It's like, well, the labels don't really matter so much to me anymore, and again, I'm not criticising anyone who perhaps really is after a certain sound, that's just what they're after, but I think for me it's kind of gone past it. It doesn't really matter to me what people really call it. It's just I've just really enjoyed just over the years just kind of getting up on stage and just really committing just to really trying to play and make music, and just with four other like-minded people, I think it's I'm just having fun up there.
Do you think then it's completely changed you? Has it sort of transformed your concentrated way of thinking in terms of the intellectual challenges of jazz, in terms of the parameters that it has?
Yeah, really, really like playing side kind of structures and chord progressions, mm-hmm. I still love it. I sort of listen to it. I still love playing kind of over more standard repertoire, but playing in this band and really just. I just felt like, I remember there was a moment where, I think it was one rehearsal in particular, I was just kind of scratching my head a bit, like, what is this that as a band we're doing, and what is it I'm doing in it? I was like questioning it, and I just thought, well, these barriers are like these things I've set up to say, right, I have to really adhere to these and really be creative inside these spaces, these boxes. Well, what if they're not there? It's like, and yeah, it's just, I just felt like it just just kind of opened a lot of doors. And it's like, you know what? Well, I mean, I still feel really feel as if I'm using these elements, and like, you know, for me, like the heart of what made me passionate about music, like jazz music. But just really playing with a certain amount of freedom that I didn't have as much before I was playing in the band.
Well, it sounds like it's made a big impression, and I think, Mark, you're responsible for it because you were the germ, the catalyst that put this band together. And you've written most of the tunes on the recording. And before we get absolutely into each of the tracks that we're going to hear, where does the name Leadbib come from?
It doesn't have any significance, but okay. It's a thing you wear at the dentist sometimes, you know, when you get like an x-ray.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't really remember why I came up with it, but it just seemed like a good name. And I think, you know, it's like 7-8 years on and people still ask about it, so it must be like of some sort of interest.
The first track is called Moth Dilemma, and on many of the tunes they seem to be quite episodic.
It's something that unfolds pretty naturally. I mean, in the early days, like on the earlier records, we used to try and think about it maybe like jazzers tend to, more like this track is going to have this person solo on it, or we're going to go for this sort of thing. Whereas now we just have the little bit of written material at the beginning, and I mean, you know, as is in jazz often. And then the middle, we let whatever happen, which, I mean, because we've played together so long and we've developed a sound together, there's like a certain language that we call upon, but it's different each time. So, yeah, I mean, it can be very episodic, you know, like we have one thing happen for 10 seconds and then maybe I play something that will signal to the bass player, to Laurent, like, oh, he wants something different to happen. So then he plays something different, you know. But like, we've developed, so we're able to do that. So sometimes it can be really episodic, and sometimes it can be one sort of continuous journey.
And what is Moth Dilemma about?
I mean, the names tend to be fairly arbitrary, but I was thinking about, I had, and I still sort of do have a problem with moths in my flat, because they eat the damper felts underneath the piano.
Right, yeah.
You know, so like where the hammer...
It's terrible. It's a tragedy.
Well, yeah, because it means that the note clicks when it comes back, when the hammer comes back.
It's funny, I understand you as a pianist.
I totally
understand.
It's Yeah, it's terrible. So like, I mean, it's better now, but it's very hard to get the felt back in there. So for a while there, I had many notes that would be like, tick, 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 tick.
Well, there's a lot of conversation actually between the saxophones, and this track actually demonstrates that rather nicely, both compositionally and in the improvisations. Moth Dilemma from the latest record, the new record from Leadbib called Bring Your Own.
We'll be right back.
led Bibb and Moth Dilemma, and I'm joined by the drummer Mark Holub and the alto saxophone player Chris Williams right here in the studio. And what I wanted to ask you guys was, were you influenced by the... because I think the culture of the sound of Lead Bibb, a lot of people would put it akin to experimental rock, progressive, but I wouldn't do that because for me it seems more reminiscent of the conception that was coming out of jazz moving into rock, so the jazz and rock changing times there at the end of the 60s.
I think for me...
it's hard to put anything in a box, but yeah. Obviously, because I'm talking to you, I have to put it in a way where I can encapsulate some understanding to what I feel from it.
I think I certainly, you know, as a youngster, was listening to weirder rock stuff like, you know, Zappa and Captain Beefheart and things like that, and also like jam bandy stuff like the Grateful Dead and whatnot.
As an American.
Yeah, that's right.
Can you believe it? This American has come over here, put together some guys, and had a real success.
Yeah, led us all astray.
Really great. It's really great.
But I think that sort of led me on to jazz and maybe sort of 60s free jazz, which led me onto, you know, like Miles in the 60s, you know, both the acoustic and electric stuff. I mean, I think that maybe is more influential as well as like some stuff that was coming out of New York in the sort of 80s and 90s.
It's probably experimentation more than anything, isn't it? Sort of conjoining things that don't necessarily belong together or just not having any limits.
Yeah, well, and I think that a lot of it is like, at first I maybe had a sort of grand idea about what I wanted it to sound like. And then over time, the guys sort of beat me down. So that it wasn't so much like I said, this is what it should sound like. It was like everyone put in something. And I think that made it, I mean, you know, yeah, we get a lot of references to rock and to punk and stuff, which I don't think is entirely accurate, but it's like there are all these different things going on, and we are like taking a lot of different references, and people are playing maybe not in like the jazz idiom all the time. And I think, you know, there's been a development in it, certainly for myself, that I think like coming out of studying jazz, it's very easy to think, oh, I must play something jazzy here, or like something clever here. And sometimes it's like, especially on this record, I hear like that I'm thinking, what's going to fit the music? I mean, I remember years ago, I was talking to Paul Clavis because I studied with Paul, and I was saying, Paul, you know, I can't imagine you playing with Mose Allison, because he does like some pop gigs sometimes. And I said, well, what do you sound like? I mean, which is a stupid question, obviously, something that a 20-year-old guy would ask. But and he said, you know, I just play what suits the music. And it's like, I sort of understand now, 10 years later, sort of what he meant, that it's like, you don't have to always think from a jazz musician's hat. You know, you can just say, what's going to suit this sound world? And that can still be you, your own style, but it has to be like something that fits in with that.
And another interesting thing is that often when you learn things, it takes you 10 years or 20 years to understand what it is you were learning. Well, we're going to go into a tune by you, Chris. It's called Little X. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I guess, yeah, the name kind of comes from... it's just really comes from, I guess, kind of holding on to your childhood and just those kind of innocent days. And, it's just about kind of like playing the computer games, pretty much. But it is just about... just that time when you were younger and just, you know, you the weekends, you haven't got much homework or much else to worry about, and you're just having a good time with your mates and just that kind of innocence and that real freedom. It's like you just, you know, you just can't get that stuff back, and hopefully that kind of came out in the tune.
This is Little X.
Thank you.
Little X from Lead Bib, written by Chris Williams, one of the alto players in the group. Pete Grogan is the other alto saxophonist. Liren Donnan is the double bass player and electric bass player. Toby McLaren is the keyboardist, who plays Fender Rhodes as well. And on drums and their fearless leader, if you look at it that way, Mark Holub. What's going on now? Are you touring? Are you doing lots of gigs, other kinds of recording, television?
Yeah, we're touring in the UK, and then April and May, we're touring in Europe, mostly Germany, but Austria and Slovenia and whatnot. And then we'll be back in the UK for a couple festivals in the summertime, and we'll be touring again here in the autumn, and touring in Europe again in the autumn. So lots of things. Yeah, it's busy time.
But people can catch you in a couple of weeks, actually, up north at the Gateshead Jazz Festival on March 26th.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That'll be a good one, right?
Yeah. I've never actually been to it, but it's supposed to be a great festival, so it should be good.
Now, Mark, what are you doing here? Why are you, as a jazz musician, living here in Britain? What's wrong with you?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, well, I came in 2000... I had done a year at university in America, and it wasn't that much fun, you know, because like I'd played jazz and, you know, sort of free improv in an amateurish way before that. And I loved playing music, and studying it in this formalized way seemed like it was taking the fun out of it. So I thought, oh, you know, why don't I travel somewhere? You know, maybe that's going to make it a little bit more exciting. And I can't even remember how I found it, but somehow I heard about Leeds, the College of Music there, and just sort of randomly chose to go and went and enjoyed it and, you know, met a lot of guys and then moved down to London. And, you know, it's nice. I think that there's a lot of great players here and a lot of people doing interesting stuff. And I think, you know, especially in the last maybe 5-6 years, there's a lot of young players playing their own music, which, you know, is really great. And, like, you know, people talk about, like, New York being a real mecca. And, of course, there's still, like, lots of great players in New York. But a lot of the players that they're talking about, when they're talking about, like, these great ones, have been around. You know, they're 50 years old now. So it's like who knows where the scene is going? I mean, it's obviously more and more global. But, you know, maybe you don't have to be in New York anymore. Even the guys that I'm looking up to from that scene, you know, guys like Jim Black and Tim Byrne and John Zorn and whatnot, they're old now. I mean, not really old, but
God,
like,
that's so ages.
No.
I was at college with Jim Black. He's not that old.
No, but I mean, it's like he's been around a long time. He's hardly like 20 years old.
No. And what is that, the definition of what makes a good jazz musician?
Oh, no, Mark.
A 20-year-old?
No, but I mean, like, there's a lot of young people who are making new music here, which it's like,
old people.
And old people. Of course, I think you misunderstood.
No, I haven't. I'm just winding up.
As a keeper, keep on pressing, you got it.
No, but I think, like, after sort of Jazz Warriors and Loose Tubes, there seems, I mean, I don't know, but it seems to be like there was sort of a gap in a way. Like, I'm not familiar, at least, with like a lot of stuff that came out in the 90s, like beyond that sort of stuff. And then it's like now a lot of those guys as well, a lot of the older guys are like making new stuff too. So it's like it becomes like a multi-generational scene. And like some of the older guys are playing with some of the younger guys.
That's a bit better.
Yeah.
Took a while, but we got there.
Yeah.
We're going to go into a piece called Hollow Ponds, and it's where all the textures become much simpler, and it's not as angular, let's say. Opens with the acoustic bass, there's simple textures, sax is joined halfway through, quite a discernible melody. Chris, do you want to talk about that piece a bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's it really is made by, I mean, of this Mark's brilliant writing.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really made by, you know, it's a feature for Liren on double bass and Mark as well. I mean, the playing there, I think it really is beautiful. And then, you know, it doesn't, like, if I think it's really just a wonderful piece of music to listen to.
This is Hollow Ponds. Hollow Ponds from Lead Bibb from their new album Bring Your Own, featuring the bass work there of Liran Donin and the drums of Mark Holub, who also composed that piece. What do you feel is next in terms of the Lead Bibb story?
I'd like to try and not go in the studio too soon. In a way, because I mean, it's hard because, like, you know, there's obviously a pressure to, like, you put out a record and you tour it and whatnot, but it's like, I'd like to not do that. But probably in like 6 months' time, I'll think, oh, we really need to do another record. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know. I'd like to tour. I'm really excited about, you know, doing all the touring, and I'm really glad at how the record's done. But yeah, I mean, I just think, sort of slowly seeing where it goes, because I feel really happy with this record, and it feels like we need to find out what else we want to say before we can do anything else.
When we were touring Sensible Shoes, the album, the previous album, we had quite an extensive touring period, and it was by the end of that I think, again, just perhaps just being in the moment, it's hard to hear that we're actually playing these tunes quite differently, but I think it was really just from playing for quite an amount of time that we really heard that we were starting to move away from how we were playing these tunes, and then new tunes were coming in, and it's like, right, okay, yeah, we're feeling ready to get back in there, but we've got that, hopefully we've got that period ahead of us, and we'll come out in a different place.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing the music and hope that you get a chance to play with some really old people, like someone who's 37 or something. That would be amazing.
I'm turning 30 this week, so I'm not. Oh dear, I'm not classed as young anymore.
You're like, oh, it's downhill from here. My goodness,
yeah,
Mark.
You're right.
Well, huge thanks to you guys, Mark Holub and Chris Williams from Lead Bibb, for coming in to speak with us. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They have an extensive tour that kicked off at the end of February, at the Purcell Room in London, and it concludes at Gateshead at the Gateshead Jazz Festival on March the 26th. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph. Panamanian pianist Danilo Perez has been wowing crowds all over the world as a member of the Wayne Shorter Quartet, but Danilo also inhabits a very rich musical world all of his own, and his latest recording demonstrates that and also shows the evolution of an artist with much to say as a pianist and cultural guardian. The album is called Providencia and is his first album for the Mac Avenue label, who have been acquiring an impressive roster of jazz musicians recently, including Kenny Garrett, Kevin Eubanks, and now this award-winning pianist. Perez combines his regular trio with bassist Ben Street and drummer Adam Cruz with carefully selected brass and woodwind for his excellent orchestrations on a few pieces. He's able to lead the listener through a world of music unashamedly Latin and specifically Panamanian with real class and imagination. Another great treat is the addition of the Indian alto saxophonist Rudresh Mahanthapa. This is Galactic Panama. Thank you. Danilo Perez and Galactic Panama. What a groove, huh? Featuring the percussion of Jamie Haddad and Ernesto Diaz. Ben Street was on bass and Adam Cruz on drums, with the irrepressible Rudresh Mahanthapa on alto. The album is called Providencia and is a good listen musically and compositionally, and out now on the Mac Avenue label. Now to our concert set with bassist Ben Markland. Ben Markland will be well known to most Rush Hour blues regulars as he plays with a whole host of local artists and is one of the hardest working musicians in the Birmingham area. Before the set, we had a quick conversation with him. So what's his background?
Grew up in Bolton, moved to Birmingham to study music. Originally a wind player, at university I decided to make a change of tact, kind of heavily influenced by my father being a bass player, you know, gravitated towards what I think is a fantastic instrument, and you know, worked towards leading my own band and writing my own tunes on the double bass. I gig fairly regularly on the jazz scene around the Midlands. I think, as many people understand, it's quite difficult to earn a living and support family, etc., just on the jazz alone. So I often find myself dipping into other genres and playing with different ensembles, etc.
And what about his band?
The band's been together for quite a long time. The band started to write. I got a commission to write some film music, and so I put a quintet together, and it's just kind of grown from there. Got Neil Bullock on drums, who I spent a lot of time back, you know, working together, rhythm section work, backing kind of soloists and musicians around the country. A good friend of mine, Pete Harris, on guitar. Brian Corbett on trumpet. Obviously, I work in his quartet. And Lewis Mather on tenor saxophone. He's recently graduated from the Conservatoire in Birmingham, and he's making great waves in the UK jazz scene, and he's got fantastic sound and a really great approach to his soloing and his sound, etc. Really, really fine player.
And finally, he told us about the set he's about to play.
So my set on this occasion starts with one of my kind of early compositions for the quintet, a piece called No Not Yet. Slow ballad that I wrote. I actually wrote it on the way to a gig. I was doing a gig over in Shrewsbury, and there was an opportunity to write a piece, and I kind of arrived a little early, and originally written for piano, but you know, recently scored it out to feature the two horns, and it's, yeah, as a quintet, we really enjoyed playing this piece. Thank you.
Ben Markland, the bassist, recorded at the Birmingham Symphony Hall as part of the Rush Hour Jazz series in September last year.
And I conclude with a track, Noah's Place, which is, again, an original composition, which I wrote for Cheltenham Jazz Festival a few years ago. Kind of an influence of funk and backbeats, mixing in some swing along the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. That's it from us. You've been listening to Pete Harris on guitar, Neil Bullock on the drums, Louis Mather on tenor, Brian Corbett on trumpet and flugel. Good night, thank you.
Ben Markland, the bassist, and his band, and Noah's Place, recorded at Birmingham Symphony Hall as part of the Rush Hour Jazz Series last year. You're listening to Jazz Lineup on BBC Radio 3 with me, Julian Joseph. Italian-born alto saxophonist Tommaso Starace has put together a strong UK band for his latest album on the Italian label he records for. The album's called Blood and Champagne and features Frank Harrison on piano, Lawrence Cottle on electric bass, and Chris Nichols on the drums. Tommaso explains in his liner notes that the inspiration for some of his original compositions on this album is inspired by two books. So just to be awkward, I've selected the one composition inspired by the movies. And this is his piece, Soundtrack. Thank you. alto man Tommaso Stares, and soundtrack from his Blood and Champagne album, out now on the Music Centre Real Production label. Frank Harrison was on piano, Lawrence Cottle bass, and Chris Nichols on the drums. That's it for this week. Join Claire Martin next week for an interview with saxophonist Tim Whitehead and a set from Sheffield bassist and vocalist Nicola Farnan. Jazz on 3 on Monday plays an improvised gig from an accomplished international group, featuring Han Benink on drums, bassist Ernst Glerum and Paul Van Kemenade on sax, US trumpeter Ray Anderson, and Frank Mobus from Berlin on guitar. Till next time, from me, Julian Joseph, bye-bye.
Hello and welcome to BBC Radio 3 Through the Night with me, Jonathan Swain. Another visit now to last year's Chopin and his Europe International Music Festival in Warsaw. A recital from pianist Michel D'Alberto. And Chopin, more often than not here, is the elephant in the room, as the saying goes, with D'Alberto focusing more on Chopin's influences and contemporaries, including Liszt arranging Chopin and Schumann's Carnival, with, among other things, its portrait of Chopin. But D'Alberto sets off with Mozart, a composer who had a big influence on Chopin, and this is a latish and particularly fine example of Mozart variations. The 9 variations on a minuet by Jean-Pierre Duport, a French composer and virtuoso cellist. Thank you. Mozart's 9 variations on a minuet by Duport, K573. The pianist there, Michel D'Alberto, playing at last year's Chopin Festival in Warsaw. Tragic is a word you often see in relation to D'Alberto's next piece, or at least profound. It's Mozart's B minor Adagio, K540, written just a few months before his 3 last great symphonies. And it's a piece that's brought a heartfelt response from countless pianists over the decades.
Thank you.
Mozart's Adagio in B minor, K540, the pianist Michel D'Alberto at last year's Chopin and his Europe Festival in Warsaw. Chopin's Europe definitely included Franz Liszt. Quite apart from Chopin's influence on Liszt, they were friends for a while. Liszt was at Chopin's debut at the Salle Pleyel in Paris in 1832. They even went to play on the same platform on a couple of occasions. What occasions those must have been. But the friendship, in fact, didn't last. Michel D'Alberto here in all three of Liszt's Liebesträume, Dreams of Love.
Thank you. Thank you.